Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Painter Scott Hurst has been a longtime member of Tulsa's visual arts community, showing regularly through the late 1980s and 1990s, but his last exhibit was 10 years ago. For a few years, due to losing a studio and life changes, Hurst quit making art altogether. But now, with a new studio, he's begun creating new work. An abstract artist by nature, Hurst's work over the years demonstrates an ongoing sense of search and experimentation. So much so that at first glance, when looking at his work created over a course of 30 years, your eye says you're looking at several artists, not one. Such is the case for his new show at Liggett Studio, Playtime and Discoveries, which covers the artist's work from the 1980s, 90s, and 2000s to some of his collage work he's been working on recently. Playtime Discoveries opens tomorrow night at 6 o'clock with an opening reception and continues on display through March 2nd at Liggett Studio at 314 South Kenosha. Scott Hurst joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Scott Hurst, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This new show, Playtime Discoveries, looks like a retrospective of your work going back a number of years and through a lot of different phases of work. It's very interesting to see how your work has evolved over 30 so odd years. Have you been surprised by the discoveries you've been making?
Yeah, I moved last year, and moving allowed me to refamiliarize myself with things that had been in the closets in the garage for years that I'd forgotten about. So I came to see all that old stuff, and that helped me get organized for the show. I also moved into an apartment last fall, and I was fortunate enough to find a studio space just down the street. So that helped me to start making again. For about 2 years, I was away from making art for whatever reasons, not really important. But finding this little studio space not only encouraged me, but somehow psychologically made it like I wanted to work again.
Now, I think it might surprise some people to know, and it probably does make sense, that artists have a lot of work hanging around wherever their space is. But it is surprising it might go back that far. But is that unusual?
You know, this is just stuff that I had not sold over the years. And wherever I lived, I moved a number of times, but I always carry it with me. And it lines the walls and leans against the walls and all this stuff. And I hang them up and stuff. And when I've had closet space and garage space, then I put it all in there too. But yeah, but it's been good for me to be able to look at it again the last few months, to refamiliarize myself with it, remember what I was doing and why I was doing. I have a painting in my bedroom, which is from the late 80s also, which I hadn't looked at for 10, 15 years, but I've got it up in my bedroom now so I can look at it when I wake up. And I was able to, how I interpret it now is, it's very autobiographical. And I doubt that I did it consciously as an autobiographical thing at that time. I think it was more subconscious when I painted it. But it's very autobiographical. There's a little box up in the upper left-hand corner, which I take to be me and my mother, basically when I was an infant. And then down below, there's this mishmash of lines and even a couple of open mouths with teeth that I could see. And it's just, that was a tumult I was in growing up, I guess. And then over at the right, then there's right next to that, moving to the right, there's this yellow-colored figure, which has an eye, which is looking back at all of the tumult. And then in the upper right, there's a figure with what I can only call a horse's head holding a book behind either a wall or a door. So that's kind of makes sense in terms of my history, too. You know, I'm only child. I've always been kind of a loner. But in this particular painting, I erased a lot of with white paint. I got rid of a lot of stuff so that what's there now was more visible. So I went over a lot of stuff and basically erased a lot of stuff with that white paint. But it's interesting. This has been a revelation to me because I totally forgot about the painting, and I didn't understand at the time, you know, so.
You didn't understand why you made it at the time, but
well,
looking back,
I didn't understand that it had those autobiographical meanings. It was just something, at least in my memory, it was just something I did. And I, you know, you're always, as a painter, you're always aware of, or I am anyway, of balance. Balance is very important to me, and also simplicity. Not being simplistic, but like Matisse said, everything in the painting needs to be there. You need to get rid of anything that doesn't absolutely have to be there.
Yeah.
So
now, as you go back and look at these paintings over 30 years, was that a common occurrence that you said, oh, this is what I was doing at that time? Or
well, some of them. I don't think I've analyzed most of them as much as the one I just talked about, because the one I just talked about I've had for several months in my bedroom, so I can look at it when I wake up. But, you know, I see other old ones, and I have memories of what I was doing or trying to do. Or one of them from 1989 that's in the show, I was surprised to learn on the back, because I used to write titles, and I would repaint over old paintings. But the most recent one, which was 89 or 90, the title I gave it was Dallas from a Car. So I remember I used to go to Dallas a lot to go to bookstores and see art and stuff, and on the way to Houston for the same reason and stuff. So anyway, Dallas from a Car. So
have you always worked as an abstract painter? Because nearly all these images, I would say Dallas from a Car has some figurative elements. There's a couple of others that one is straight figurative, but or landscape, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But representational, I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Have you always been an abstract painter, or has representation ever been a part of your...
For the most part, representation has never been something that I have focused on or aimed at, no. I have done representational imagery throughout the years, sometimes. When I was at my house, which I sold last year, there was not a room that I felt was conducive to painting large. And I always liked to, in previous years, paint large. But when I was at the house for several years, I started painting smaller. So a number of the works in the show are like approximately 12 by 12 inches. When people ask me what I've done, I've always just said shapes and colors, because that's kind of the way I see what I'm doing, shapes and colors. And it's not that important to me whether it's so-called abstract or objective, representational, figurative. It's just more a painting. But I think mostly I have worked in a non-objective, abstract kind of form.
What becomes apparent in this show is that you've always been searching for a new way of expression, because there's a lot of isms in this show. there are sort of pointillistic abstract images. There are things that look somewhat minimal. There are others that are very much abstract expressionism. There's a whole range of work. Is that just been you always looking for a new way of putting something down on paper or on canvas?
I always hope to find something new, because that's what it's about to me. It's discovering new things and learning about new things. Another thing I have learned about looking at all these older pieces is that I always seem to have combined kind of a gestural, wild, throwing the paint around with brush or drywall scraper, whatever, versus kind of a hard edge thing. And I often have incorporated both of those impulses in a given work.
And you say a hard edge, you're talking almost like a rectangular or box-like shape.
Well, sometimes I use a ruler to outline a form or whatever and paint very precisely within those lines. If I use a pen and then, make a column, for example, I'll fill in with a small brush the column that's created. But it's been interesting to me to realize that I combine both of those impulses, kind of a geometric along with a kind of wild throw everything out there.
I see that in a lot of the work. And I think a lot of times when people see an abstract artist and see a lot of work, and especially as they would see in this show, there's a big variety in the work. What does that straight line mean? Does it have a meaning to you, or is it just a pleasing image at the point you're doing it?
I would say probably the latter. I mean, when I was at the house and was, for the most part, working smaller, on a small easel, like approximately 12 by 12 inch panels, I don't think the hard edge imagery had a real meaning to me. I just think I was doing that because that's been in my head since I started painting, apparently. And it was, since I was working small at that point, it was just easier to use a ruler and do that kind of hard edge kind of stuff. I also have always liked to, when I've lived in different places, and I still have this in my studio now, but I have a 4-foot by 8-foot piece of plywood, which I tack up canvas to and then paint on that, so for larger things. So I've done both, but when I was at the house for the last several years, I did more of these kind of geometric, quasi-geometric things, you know.
And it looks like some of your most recent work that's in the show tends to be collage. Have you been experimenting with collage?
Yeah. When I got my studio this past summer of 2018, and I'd been away from art making for 2 years approximately, I started back making collages. That allowed me somehow to get back into painting. I didn't know how to just start painting and pick up where I left off 3, 4, 5 years ago. I didn't know how to do it.
Can you explain not knowing how to do something you've done for 20 or 30 years, but you leave off for a couple of years and you just didn't feel...
Well, I just...
Didn't feel confident or...
I just forgot. Like I didn't know how to... And I still haven't gotten back to where I was in certain earlier times when I was painting. I don't think I will ever be able to make paintings that look like the ones in the 80s. Of course, that's partially because I was just a different person. But I don't remember how to use a brush still quite that way. Hopefully I will soon. But the whole process of working since this past summer has been, collage allowed me a way into getting back into painting. I've been painting, but just different kinds of things. I use palette knife a lot, and I always have. But in the 80s and around that time, I used brush a lot. And if someone asked me to do something with a brush that I was doing then, I wouldn't be able to.
Is it just a matter of repetition and skill and
I think so.
Yeah.
It's learning by doing, and I just haven't done that in so long.
It's like a guy who goes away from baseball for 2 years and tries to pick up a bat and hit a ball, right? Is that the sort of thing?
Pretty much, I think.
So what has collage taught you about your eye? Has it taught you anything new about it when you're taking paper or whatever materials you're using to create a collage and create an image that way?
Well, in a way, it's easier, but I didn't to start out that way made sense to me because I didn't have to use a brush and remember from 3 years ago whatever I was doing. But it's very easy to cut out pieces of paper, and then you can experiment. I have ink, and you can drip ink onto it, and you can collage other things over it. And I've on several of those, I've also used oil paint over it here and there, a little bit. So collage allowed me to do a number of things at the same time.
My guest today is Scott Hurst, artist and painter, and the Liggett Studio is featuring his work, over 30 years of work, in a exhibit titled Playtime, and it has a greater than symbol, but Playtime Leads to Discoveries, and it opens Friday and runs through March 2nd at the Liggett Studio. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. I was struck by the title Playtime because that is one thing that comes across in your work because of the sheer variety of things. You know, it looks like some you're looking at other work and being inspired by it. And it's a wide variety. I mean, there's aspects of de Kooning. There's aspects of Clifford Still. There's aspects of Cy Twombly. That's a huge swath of art history right there. Is painting time playtime for you?
It is. I've always taken art very, it's always been very important to me. You know, I always take it very seriously, but by the same token, it is a form of play. And part of the reason for calling this Playtime Discoveries, this show, is that I feel that art is a high form of play. And I also think that play is very important in our culture, but it's maligned right now. It's not appreciated. It's underappreciated. The left brain is emphasized much more than it should be. The right brain, you know, in schools, art is not funded. You know, it's not uncommon at all. It's for decades, it's been not unusual that arts programs are not even funded. You know, and it's getting worse and worse all the time. So that's, to my view, that's the opposite of what should be taking place. So art is very important to me, but it's a form of play.
Has it always been that way for you? I mean, that's the best part of your day is when you're.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I'm making art, doing whatever form it is, you just lose track of yourself and you lose track of time. So you participate in the eternal all of a sudden because you're not aware of yourself like you are during a normal day-to-day events. So of course that's always been a great boon and a great plus of doing stuff, making stuff. Yeah.
Now in the publicity for this show, there's one piece of art in the show that is absolutely a landscape. And I found it interesting in a show that is multiple pieces of abstract art. You made a card with this one landscape of a mountain scene. What was important about this particular piece that you decided to do?
Well,
that?
I chose six different images and had cards made, multiple cards made from each of the six uh-huh. images. And this one, I thought it was a good painting, and
it is a good painting.
It showed the diversity. I mean, it was different than the others. So I tried to find six things that were kind of showed what I do, but that were not the same.
Yeah.
And this was actually, I found this image online. It's of a painted desert, and it does look unreal because of the colors of the desert, but actually it was real. But to me, I don't think of the paintings as, in the first place, I don't think of them in terms of abstract or representational. To me, they're just paintings. It's shapes and colors. You know, whether it assumes the form of a mountain with a painted desert or the so-called abstract pieces, they're all shapes and colors. That's kind of the way I look at it.
Yeah. So was there something striking about that image and you said, I have to paint this?
Yeah, I don't remember specifically, but I said, wow, I like that.
Is that something you do often or was that, well, is that an outlier?
No, it's not really an outlier. I have a number of smaller pieces that I painted after photographs. I went to Greece in 2010, for example, and I have several pieces that I made small paintings after photographs, which are realistic.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the pieces that are in the show. One that is very striking, and one of the first images I saw was a piece called Alzheimer's. And it's, again, there is some abstract imagery, and it's, again, what you were discussing earlier, this idea of a combination of geometric series of boxes that are painted a variety of sort of almost like a color field in many ways, and yet there's this swooshing sense on top of that. Tell us a little bit about this painting.
Well, that was done around 2009, I believe, and I was using drywall scrapers at that point, so that's where the boxes come in.
Yeah.
But in the center of the canvas is an image that is like what I was talking about earlier. It's very chaotic and stuff, and I did that with probably a scraper, but I just went crazy with my hand, you know. But the term Alzheimer's, my dad had Alzheimer's. Mm. So that's where that painting comes from. It reminded me of my experience taking care of him. We had to hire people for a couple of years to take care of him. And then I took him to St. Simeon's. So that's where that comes from.
And I assume there's some sort of deeper story in these geometric boxes and all of this chaos on top of
in the sense of a specific story. No, the rest of the stuff besides that chaotic image in the center, which represents Dad, I guess. Other than that, it's mostly about formal things. It's mostly about you know, a little white form here surrounded by a brown form or something, and it's just the outside part of it is more formal. And when I scrape. At that time, when I would scrape the wet paint, a lot of surprises would come up, which I love.
What sort of surprises happen when you do that?
Well, you can't control. When you get a big glob of paint and you scrape it, you don't know what you're going to get. So the whole thing is a surprise. But
you might get a very clean line. Otherwise, you might have paint that'll glob out or something like that. Or
well, in my experience, it's not predictable what you get. But especially if you say you scrape brown paint, and then on top of that you put a glob of white and then you scrape that, then you really don't know what you're going to get. So it's all surprise, but I just kind of did it until I was pleased or satisfied with whatever happened.
Another piece that I really liked a lot was, it's got a great title, and this is what's funny, is the things that are more representational or more figurative are often titled untitled, and the true abstract ones have great titles. This is one. While listening to Morton Feldman, Nana Mouskouri, Dave Brubeck, and Charlie Parker. That's a great title. And you were just listening to a playlist you were painting?
I love to listen to music when I'm painting. And Morton Feldman is probably my favorite composer. Mm-hmm. I learned about him because he was great friends with Philip Guston, who I did my master's thesis on. They were friends from 1950 on. And so anyway, I love his music. And I love the other people too, that mm-hmm. that I found out about over time. You know, the jazz. I used to listen to Ornette Coleman. Not so much anymore because I had a studio on 6th Street, and one night someone broke in and stole my whole Ornette Coleman collection CDs.
Oh, no.
So I wasn't able to buy it back immediately, so I got out of the habit of that. But I love Ornette Coleman. I used to listen to him all the time, too. But all of those referenced musicians I've just enjoyed listening to, and when I was doing that particular painting, I was listening to one or another of them.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting technique that you use in this show is in a painting titled To Cy Twombly. Cy Twombly is the famous minimalist, best known for his circles, you know, the circle paintings where it's just these ovals that he's putting on a canvas, sometimes even in graphite. This is a very different painting, but it's also very minimal in its own way. Tell us about this painting.
Well, Cy Twombly did a lot of different kinds of work. A good place to... In this part of the country, a good place to go see his work is at the Cy Twombly Gallery, which is part of the Menil Collection in Houston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a whole building devoted to him. And, you know, he tended to work really large. I mean, really, really large. But this painting was, I used to smoke a pipe for years. And I would collect the ashes from the ashtray. And at some point, I started throwing them onto white paint, wet white paint, you know. So anyway, I did two pieces around 2009. This is the second one, the other one I sold at that time. But I got titanium white, filled the canvas, and then I threw ashes at it. And it seemed appropriate because Cy Twombly had died right around that time, I think. So I dedicated the other one to him, and I decided to title this one to him. And there's a few old matches, too, that I managed to retrieve from my ashtray. So I just tossed the whole thing. It was interesting, but it's also a symbol of mortality.
Interesting. Is that one of the few times where you're using what would be, I guess, found objects, or do you do often? Or
I love found objects. Since I've been in my new studio, I've been using found objects quite a bit. When I find things that I like, I love to incorporate them and actually basically create a story around what I find. For example, I was out at my storage facility, and I got out of the car, and there was what looked like a domino, but it said 5 on it. So it's like a three-dimensional object. It's not thick, but it's thick enough to be three-dimensional, and it had a 5 printed on it. So I thought, what am I going to do with this? This is interesting. So I created this smaller piece called Too Many Fives, and I stenciled in 2s and 5s, appropriately numbered. You know, I think there are 5 5s or something like that, and there's an appropriate number of 2s. But anyway, that's an example of how I like to have fun with titles, too, because too many 5s, you know. But anyway, I worked around it and did all the stenciling, and then I glued that domino thing to it.
Yeah. Well, I have to ask you about another piece called Sentinel, which has this, it's almost two images. There's this, again, you described it earlier, this geometric sort of sense to the bottom of it, and then these slashing movements upward at the top, almost like a skyscraper in a way. A really interesting image. What do you remember about this piece?
I remember I was pleased with it. I thought it was probably the strongest picture in the show, in a show that I had in 2009. But I remember doing it. It was fun to do. It was, I just went crazy with the drywall knife scraper, whatever it was, in the middle. And I remember scraping some of the paint that was there to see what was underneath, and I liked what was underneath, so I just left that. And that's an example of something else that I would have to keep painting more to learn how to redo, probably. I mean, maybe pretty soon I could try something like that, but I haven't been working large like that lately.
Yeah. Has there been any discoveries of things where you say, I have no memory of making this whatsoever?
Yeah, actually, there's a painting called, I think it's called The Forgotten, yellow in parentheses. And I called it that because obviously at one point the painting was yellow, but I have no memory of doing a yellow painting. But the paint that was over it, which also includes some ashes, but what's over it was chipping off. So it revealed these 3 or 4 areas of yellow. And then I just kept filing it off until the paint wouldn't flake off anymore, until it was safe. But there's these areas, little areas of yellow. And it you know, intrigued me because I have no memory of doing anything
like that. Now, did you have you taken a look at some of these and reworked any of them as you're getting ready to hang them, or this is the way they were created and this is the way they they went into storage or up against a wall somewhere?
For the most part, the latter. I haven't really reworked anything.
Uh-huh. Is there anything that has given you new ideas for
exploration
from just seeing some work that you hadn't?
Well, sure. Uh-huh. Not having seen a number of these in a long time, another one of my favorite artists is named Milton Resnick. And the stuff that I like the most, I mean, he did some kind of quasi-figurative stuff in the 50s, but stuff that he's most well known for are just fields of color, you know, non-objective. And when I first saw one of his pieces, I was in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and they had a relatively small one of his hanging. And I walked next to it, and I just kind of stopped and looked at it. It was fascinating because it had a presence. And his wife was also a painter. Her name was Pat Pasloff. And I used to have a quote from her taped on my fridge. And she said something like, paraphrasing, she said, "The paintings are talking, but there are very few that can hear what they have to say."
Well, so. It sounds like it's been a revelation to go back and look at this work over 30 years. Does it change how you're going to go back into the studio next week when you pick up that brush again?
Well, I was doing some things that were Milton Resnick, I'm not going to say inspired. They probably were inspired, but I don't remember. I may have arrived at something similar to what Milton Resnick arrived at independently, because I used to paint over paintings over and over, and I've still got a few that are not in the show. There are a handful in the show, I think, that are like this, but I still have some others that I'm keeping that are basically just built-up surfaces. And I have one in my living room that an earlier layer of paint was colored. So there are little flecks of yellow and green and blue and red that show through, but on the top it's dark gray, charcoal gray. So, yeah, I mean, it's been very helpful to remember this, and it makes me remember Milton Resnick and all these artists that I have learned from and love. So, sure, it all feeds into everything.
All right. Well, Scott, we wish you great success with the show, Playtime Discoveries, which opens Friday at Liggett Studios. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Pleasure.
Painter Scott Hurst speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The longtime Tulsa artist has a new exhibit opening Friday at the Liggett Studio, Playtime Discoveries. Opens with a reception Friday evening from 6 to 9 at the Liggett Studios at 314 South Kenosha, and will remain on display through Saturday, March 2nd. Details at LiggettStudio.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.